Tacky Talk time, folks. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us once again for our weekly podcast. Hey, Tacky.
Hey, Joe. Happy to see you on a bright Wednesday as we zip through the month of March.
It's funny. I was saying that to someone earlier, that the month of March usually goes very slowly, but not this time. For some reason, it seems to have gone by pretty quick.
It actually has. It's another month where the days, I think, start really midweek, and we actually have, I think, a usual number of Fridays. And before we know it, tax time is here, and so is the Boston Marathon, I believe.
Yeah, all those things and more. I know you just did an update recently about the senior circuit breaker tax credit, and it's not too late, right, for folks to claim that if they qualify.
Absolutely. Just remind folks that if you're a senior age 65 and older, or you have a family member or a friend who are, and you help them with finances, you know, please definitely remind them about the senior circuit tax break or form on your state income tax. The form is, what do you call it? There's like a whole worksheet associated with it to see if you qualify. And since it's a tax credit, you actually get cash. So I know that Social Security is not taxed in Massachusetts, and neither is the pension system. But just because you don't pay taxes doesn't mean you can't qualify for credits. They would send you a check or direct deposit as long as you fill out the forms. And you can have a three-year look back. So you turn 65 in the year prior to the tax year, meaning the tax year where you file. So, we're in 2022, you're filing for tax year 2021. If you turn 65 years old, you can still apply for it retroactively. And I think it's well over $1,200 right now, which is a decent chunk of change. I strongly encourage this, and also remind folks that if I remember correctly, April 15th is on Patriots Day. Your federal taxes are still due on time. Or is it Patriot? Is it, was it a Saturday?
18th is Patriots Day this year.
Yeah. Hold it. 15th is the Friday. Right. Friday the 15th. So yeah, I mean, tax day is Friday, April 15th. I thought it was like April 19th in my mind for some reason. Let me check that later. But no, tax day is coming up, so definitely get your stuff in order. I do understand a lot of folks took unemployment, unfortunately, during the pandemic. We have have a deduction from taxes, a portion of the unemployment benefits for businesses regarding the PPP you received, the Payroll Protection Program. If it was not a grant, it was not a loan. If you didn't take the loan, you took the grant. We have to also provided a tax deduction for that. So both cases, there's a deduction from your taxes that you don't have to pay taxes on a portion or all of it. Yeah, I'm having trouble stringing my words together this morning. So definitely consult your accountant. Obviously, you can use things like TurboTax, or you can go online to the state Department of Revenue as well as the federal IRS regarding how to do online applications. And obviously, if you need a form, if you still like paper and you can't get one at the library, we're more than happy to print stuff out you need and put it in the mail to you. It'll be quite a few sheets of paper if I print it up for you, but we're happy to do that if that's what you like.
Yeah, it's a great benefit for a lot of folks. I know before my mom passed, she used to take advantage of it, and it really helped.
Oh, absolutely. My mom takes advantage of it, and she does quite well. She's pretty much almost 100% Social Security and her savings. So, she makes like a bandit. As I said, we were still in pandemic at the time. She got all the federal stimulus money plus the senior circuit tax break that year. So she made up better than me.
Speaking of pandemic unemployment, Tacky, I'm concerned. Well, first of all, I know there was a lot of fraud when it first came out, but now there's talk of, Russia cyber attacking us. Is there fear for that happening again?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, supposedly the Russians are not condoning in-country hackers, but they're also not doing anything about it. So you're not going to do anything about it. It's one step to like saying you condone behavior. Also, where there are private groups in Europe and Ukraine, and perhaps the United States independently also cyber attacking Russia, the group Anonymous Twitter account has been pretty forward about the fact they're attacking the Russian government system and other private sector stuff. So welcome to the 21st century warfare, where it's not just guns and bullets and bombs and missiles and all this other terrible ways of taking people's lives, but also try to cripple people's communication lines through cyber warfare, impact government information, and even in the case of Russian state media, because it's pretty much just, you know, the Russian state media runs everything. They try to cripple the Russian state media or usurp the information to get information out to the public they haven't seen. Conversely, you know, U.S. obviously, you know, the state website, you know, where I work is constantly being attacked, as well as the federal government, but also a private sector business such as big banks. You know, they also have incredible cybersecurity. I talked about this years ago with them. They spent a lot of money. Same with telecom industry, spent a lot, like hundreds of millions of dollars in cybersecurity. But, you know, there's also soft targets like shopping malls. As we discovered, you know, the Steamship Authority, soft target. They hit the big gas pipeline down in the south that disrupt gas in the southern states, which they should have had better security. I know that they're privately run companies. However, utility companies, you know, generally a lot of them have limited internet access to secure areas, but clearly that one didn't. And I visited electrical generation plant in Massachusetts before, and they have a closed system. There is no internet. It's a completely closed system. So obviously it varies from business to business. But for those people at home, if you're worried, definitely don't download stuff you don't know. Don't take phone calls from people claiming their tech support. You know, sounds like pretty common stuff. Nowadays, they also do WhatsApp scams. Facebook Messenger scams have been around forever. If it looks too good to be true, an appearance or words, either way, you know there's a problem. And of course, now there's tech scamming as well. And this time of year, the IRS scam and the immigration scam is the highest, where they target folks to say, you know, the IRS money, we're going to come put you in jail. They'll give us your bank account number. The same thing with immigration. A lot of people who get native language calls at random. Sometimes, you know, you probably have gotten a call in Mandarin or another language, and you're like, you know, this ain't me. Why are they doing this? Well, it's because they're going to threaten you with deportation if you don't give them money. Mm. And if you're a rural population, you don't know what's going on. And by the way, the political situation, you know, on social media and the 24-hour news just creates more fear in these communities. Sadly, people take advantage of that. I mean, you know, you'd be surprised how your social media words and it gets out to some vulnerable populations will freak them out and to become 100% easy targets for scammers.
Yeah, they know exactly which buttons to push, you know, to institute that fear, and that will elicit, you know, a response.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, everything you say online and every word said on 24-hour news cycles has enormous impact on people's lives that you may not feel it, but absolutely creates an opportunity for new victims for scammers. This wasn't the case as prevalent. Prior, I mean, it was like, you know, the door-to-door stuff that, you know, you may remember if you're a bit older. You may get some random telephone robocalls when they finally created robocalling back in the mid-80s. You could just call every number technology. But nowadays, because of the way we communicate and how much of it's in a public forum, it isn't hard for savvy computer folks to figure out the best way to target different audiences to scam them. And you know, if you don't think the Russians and the Chinese and all these other countries aren't monitoring your social media, think again. I mean, it gives them a baseline of what of how the American public may or may not be thinking, and also creates an image they can reflect back in us in their propaganda media. It's hard to you.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, Putin himself is using it with regards to chemical and biological weapons, you know, falsely claiming that the West is planning to use them, probably as a prelude to using them himself.
Oh, yes. And I'm sure some of you may have seen some social media advertising promoting Russian propaganda regarding the false claims about the invasion of Ukraine because you visited certain websites and the Google algorithm would target you there, or Facebook algorithm because you made certain comments, advertising going away. And, since the sort of kind of, you know, a market forum in social media and websites, you know, the big tech companies have a real challenge here because the sheer volume of stuff hitting them. And it's harder, a computer system, you know, algorithm is not going to be able to discern properly, you know, what is real and what is not. Right. And there is a human component, which is very time consuming to do that. And people ask me, you know, how you get like censor in places like China. You have a population of 1.4 billion people, manpower isn't a problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's sheer volume that will get the job done for them. Yeah.
Yeah, overwhelming numbers can help, you know, on, you know, was it? Yeah, help in getting work done. It's like many hands can help to get a lot of work done faster.
Yeah, it makes light work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I found it interesting. I don't know if you saw the read an article the other day that people at the White House had meetings with TikTok influencers in an effort to kind of counter the propaganda back at Russia.
Well, there was a great Saturday Night Live skit. I don't know if you guys all saw that skit about that news article. And it's kind of a weird world we live in today, right? I mean, as a sitting elected official, people make assumptions. I know things that really, I assume I know what I'm talking about. But now we live in a world where you have people online with absolutely no medical history, no access to like a diversity of information, and making just comments and anecdotes, you know, off the top of my head, and tens of millions of people hinge on every word that it's real. Used to be, we just talk about celebrities in Hollywood talking like, what are you guys saying? I mean, that doesn't make sense. But nowadays it's, you know, just a lot of just folks on social media, which quite frankly, folks, they make money on every click and comment you say. So the crazier it is, the more money they make. I mean, I keep reminding my friends about this stuff. It's all about the money. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do about the truth. It has nothing to do about you. I mean, it's all about the money. So if you buy into whatever they're saying, and we saw this very much with COVID, a lot of people make money on monetization because every time you see them, it drives up the monetization, which is why YouTube is trying to crack down on false information because people are monetizing false information. They talked about how people try to monetize on a fake video footage on the Ukrainian war. So which is now, you know, news media, all news media in the West, has been working to verify before using social media videos on their news stations because people are trying to monetize. This is kind of a sad state of affairs we live in.
It's very, they're being paid to lie.
Oh, yes. And you're contributing to it. And I don't think people understand that as well as they hear about monetization, but don't quite understand every time you make a visit or tell a friend to visit. Well, you know, that's how they make the money. So there's no incentive for them to behave better. And it's fascinating the White House decided to try to find social media influencers to basically push the government's propaganda or their point of view through them. But I mean, what is their incentive for some of these social media folks? I mean, some may be good patriots, so to speak, or just good citizens and decide that this makes more sense and will potentially take the hit on monetization or lose some followers. And that's a decision each person is going to have to make on their own.
Yeah.
But I mean, these guys are making a lot of money.
No, oh, yeah. I couldn't, when I read that, I couldn't help but think, my gosh, this is the modern day version of leafletting. You know, back during Second World War, they'd fly over enemy territory and drop propagandists' pamphlets and literature.
Yeah. And for those who are wondering why TikTok, it's because TikTok is still accessible in Russia for now.
Right.
Russian government has shut off Twitter and Facebook from their internet because they can. And they're probably likely roaming around trying to figure out what other social media or direct messaging app programs they're going to cut off from Russia to try to limit information going in. So the reason TikTok is out there is it's still a Chinese-owned company. I know there's the spinoff of the American division. That's been kind of like an ongoing process for a long time. Or I think it's Oracle that's, I think, the US end operator owner. But I mean, the Russians trying to cut off TikTok will have political repercussions with China.
Right. And there's a tenuous relationship going on between those two right now.
Oh, yeah. Some of these decisions the Russians are making are very clearly foreign relations related to try to maintain what few friends they have on a national stage. If you guys seen the UN, it has been going well for them on these resolution votes. And I don't think it's going to go well moving forward as we continue on the resolution votes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know the UN, you know, isn't a enforcement agency in the conventional manner. You all think how government works. But in the world of public opinion, the UN actually matters to citizens outside the US, which actually values the UN on so many levels that we don't appreciate because we don't need things like UNICEF in the United States, right? We don't need to take advantage of their vaccination, the CODA program, was it Codex, the vaccination assistance program, or having working with other doctors groups on trying to help eliminate polio and measles and mumps in lower income countries. Right. I mean, you know, we live in America. We're very fortunate. We don't need those services, but the UN does matter to a lot of countries that receive services as well as these votes to represent the international community, and Russia's not doing well.
Right, exactly, yeah. So let's talk about what's going on Beacon Hill these days, Jackie.
That's been fairly quiet, actually. Yeah. We did have some interesting last week regarding the education minister from Ireland come make a visit and make some statements. And we passed a couple of bills in the House to the Women's Heritage Trail do designations around the country regarding important women to the state in United States history. And we also passed a bill regarding banning discrimination in schools regarding hairstyles.
Right.
And people may remember the case in Malden. We had two African-American teenagers with braids, and the school scolded them for that and then suspended them.
That was a charter school, actually.
Yeah, they got, well, charter schools, well, that's a different conversation. It's special. Right. I'm not a fan of these things, as the public knows, but regardless, yeah, I mean, you know, they were singled out, and we've seen similar cases in Boston Land of singling out kids. Mm. It isn't like a uniform dress code, because it was uniform, it would be identical. So a Catholic school child over here. So I'm very familiar with identical dress code. Over there, I mean, you know, it was clearly a targeting situation. We passed a bill last year. We passed them again last Thursday. This week, there's no formal session scheduled, which means they just take more meetings on days when we don't have formal sessions.
Right, because they're more accessible.
I become more accessible for that day. I had an interview with Bloomberg Radio this past Thursday also. I like being on Bloomberg too. I mean, they hit hard questions in a polite, actually pretty smart way. Mm-hmm. And as we do here, they give a little clue what they're going to talk about, but it's always open mic for them.
Okay.
So they end up doing a little bit of dancing because they try to figure out exactly what the question is, because no one told you what the question is before you started.
Yes.
So yeah. All the stuff you prepped for didn't show up.
You can't prepare for the unknown. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I do some prep because they gave me a few clues what we're going to talk about. Then they just hit me from the left and I was like, oh, okay. And I have to go through the database in my head, as you guys have seen me do this on this show, as my eyes kind of roll in the back of my head. I'm trying to remember something.
Yeah, there is no script, folks.
No script here. Yeah. This is part of being in this business is trying to consume as much knowledge as possible and try to be a jack of all trades, but master of none. And sometimes the media will just ask questions out of the blue, and it sounds like I'm stumbling a little. It's because I have no idea this question was coming. Mm-hmm. The presumption is some reason I would magically know in half a second what's going on. That's the media's prerogative. And frankly, unlike some other folks, I really okay, fine. I mean, that's kind of my attitude about this at this point in my life. Okay, fine, whatever. Let's just do this.
Did you go to the St. Patrick's Day breakfast, by the way?
In Southie, no.
Okay.
I've not gone to that in probably almost 7 years at this point.
All right.
You've been to one, or in my case, four, kind of seen them all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Before now, they did a few before I was elected. So, they did a great job. You know, of course, we went into a new normal. The parade went off well. My friends in Southie told me that things went pretty smoothly overall, and people were eager to try to even more get to more norm, so to speak, next cycle, provided what happens in this pandemic. It's still pandemic, folks. It's not epidemic yet.
Yeah, there's BA2 now is the next variant that's of concern.
Yeah, the Boston Globe says that New England, about 50% of all new cases in New England is the B2 variant. The B2 variant means it just spreads faster. Right now, Omicron is less than 2 days-ish to get in your body and then say you can give it to somebody else. If it's even more infectious than that, that means the time it takes to cling to your lungs is faster, as well as the the time it takes to become fully incubatable, so to speak. It's incubated completely in your body. You have a high enough viral load to leave. One of the things that looking at Omicron in particular is where it goes. You know, we always know that COVID is a respiratory disease. It kills your lung cells that allows all the stuff that your lung cells protect you from into your body to kill your lungs. It's a respiratory disease. But it seems like some of the mild symptoms may or may not be because of the fact it sits in the back of your throat.
Hmm.
Which also, by the way, means that you're going to just spit it at people more if it's in the back of your throat. For the lack of a better term, I mean, when you talk, you have fluids, you know, particles coming to your mouth from little droplets. So if that's more true than not, it could be a very strong explanation why the case has been sort of kind of more mild, because it doesn't quite reach, you know, killing your lung cells. But I mean, this is now the dominant variant in Europe. You know, we always run like 3 weeks to 6 weeks behind Europe. When they hit high, we're like 3-6 weeks. And now we've seen this in Asia. I mean, after we went through the peak of our wave, they're hit peaks now, or in the peak mode, depending on, you know, what country you're in. And not surprising, it's killing the unvaccinated, and it's killing seniors. So in Hong Kong, for example, the senior population, I think I said this last time, it's well below 70%. It's in the 60s on vaccination rate, and have a 64% death rate of all deaths in Hong Kong. And they went from 200 death rates to all COVID. And mind you, they really had very strict structures, quarantine and lockdown and all this stuff, to 3,200 and counting deaths. You know, they went to 1 million infections after spending most of the time under 10,000 total. So yeah, it's still dangerous, folks. I mean, and you say, oh, it's just old folks. Well, the 36% of the population is under 65 that was killed by Omicron B2. And not surprising, the majority were unvaccinated. You know, Hong Kong's confirming that as well, like we've been saying that in the US. And also people that are vaccinated with a huge immune problem. If you're a cancer patient, you have OCPD, a respiratory issue, vaccines reduce the chance of getting really sick. If you're healthy, it also reduces getting sick if you're immune compromised, but your odds aren't good on the immune compromised. So, you know, obviously, you should still be careful about people. People are still concerned, should definitely wear a mask. And of course, for the love of Pete, please wash your hands. I mean, I still can't get over that one. And of course, you know, people know I take care of my mom. You know, she's stage 4 lung cancer. So obviously, people see me still trying to avoid large crowds of people for long periods of time. And, you know, obviously I got my mask on when I'm in, you know, crowded situations, but I've gone out. I mean, I've been to a movie theater with not a lot of people in it. I've been eating out, but also noticed that restaurants have put tables further apart from each other.
Okay.
You know, which is fine with me. I mean, they're able to get similar customers, but people, you know, have an extra foot or 2 feet of space between the tables.
Yeah. And all the sneeze guards and all the stores are still up and probably will be up for the future.
Yeah, I agree with that. And those are booths. I've been to places where they have booths. They have the plexiglass around you, which oddly enough I like, because interesting enough, you can hear the person you're talking about on the other side of the table.
Yeah, there is that added benefit too of sound dampening for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do think the restaurant industry in particular, you know, will maintain very high safety standards. I think most of them are very high safety standards, not just employees, but also, you know, the care they take inside their businesses. You know, obviously, again, encourage people to patronize local restaurants and retailers. If you're not sure, give them a call. And if you're still uncomfortable going doors with large crowds, well, they're going to accommodate the best they can on things like takeout and other things. Right now, it's very customer friendly, even though we do still have a workforce shortage.
Right. Yeah. Our delivery services, in fact, to pre-pandemic fees now, Tacky?
Not yet.
Okay.
We got an email from a person who doesn't like the fact we cap these fees at 15%. In case you all are wondering, the fees can be transferred to the consumer, but they also get a cut of the action of the actual price of the food.
Yeah.
So I actually prefer to do pickup whenever possible, even though sometimes it's not always convenient, because the local restaurant saves money.
Right, exactly, yeah. Let's talk about sports betting. The governor says, go for it. What do you think?
Well, actually, this is a Bloomberg question they asked me out of the blue. It was not on the to-do list of asks. So, I mean, it's very simple. As I told Bloomberg, I'm going to say the same thing here. Until the Senate puts out a public proposal, the votes aren't there. This ain't difficult business. If you have the votes, you go ahead and say that, you know, leadership team basically goes in and says that, hey, this is the plan we have. At this stage in the game from the House, and I can't speak for the speaker, I can only speak for myself, but for the love of Pete, give us something. I mean, you don't have to give us our plan. Just give us something so we know what you're offering. Yeah, just something, a counter proposal, any idea, just put it out there in public so that we have an idea what's going on and give us a clue about your vote count. And, you know, the governor wants to do it. You know, obviously the House wants to do it. We're behind the times in the Northeast region, not just New England, but the whole Northeast region. You know, we're like one of the last, and obviously we're the biggest economy in New England. So, you know, gambling is, as you all know, is very popular. And I read some of these excuses like, oh, it's going to hurt the lottery. Well, that was the excuse about casino gaming. And, you know, people may know I've done a lot of research over the years. And if you have a fledgling lottery, a casino will kill the lottery. This is not a fledgling lottery. This is a fully mature top five lottery in the country, despite size of population. We are the smallest population at top five.
It was one of the first, I think, state lotteries, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was 1972.
Yes.
I remember actually had to look up the history in this when I staffed in Morrissey's office. I had to go back in time and find the news articles. Back when it was a very different legislature, you know, 240 House, but also the way they operated was very different, very different ethics laws. You know, staffing was very different, very, very different world. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because they had formed a special commission through government regulations at the time, it was government regulations committee. And they spent quite a bit of time researching it. And the lottery was originally meant to do cultural funding.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
And over time, because largely a Prop 2.5, it transformed into local aid to cities and towns, which has good and bad, as you all can figure out. I mean, you know, it's good because we are trying to offset your property tax revenue loss by supplementing both state tax dollars and lottery money, as well as, you know, Chapter 90 road assistance programs, all these grant programs the state has, all this bonding stuff that we do, all these earmarks that the state delegation works very hard to get as many earmarks as possible for local agencies and local road projects and bridge projects and human services and so many other things as they come up. Because of the limitations of Prop 2.5. Yeah. On the flip side, though, you know, the city and towns get rather addicted to lottery money, obviously. It's pretty obvious. You know, that we represent, you know, close to, I think, almost 40% of the city budget is a big chunk of local aid and Chapter 70 education money. That doesn't count things like school breakfast assistance, accounts of aging, you know, library assistance, you know, the road and bridge money. I mean, it adds up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and without that, like you say, property taxes would be substantially higher.
Yeah, to my knowledge, never been a Prop 2.5 override in Quincy.
Nope, my knowledge either, yeah.
Yeah, and having a strong state delegation with the speaker, obviously love to have the speaker in Quincy, you know, is very important. And the John Keenan, our counterpart in the Senate, does, you know, a lot of work on, you know, putting and holding this House material together. And, you know, we communicate what he is able to get his hands on the Senate, and we try to work, you know, work the delegation on the conference committee to ensure that, you know, get all our money. But the strength of, you know, the strength of a good delegation can't be underscored. My good friend Tom Gordon from Lowell is very likely to be the next city manager. And he's been there since, I think he's been there since like 93 or something. I mean, he's a 30-year guy. And that leaves Lowell with a rep that's been there. I think he's on his fourth term, and a brand new rep elected last term, a senator that was elected 6 years ago now. Was it 4 years ago? 4 years ago now. So they have a very young delegation. And losing Tom Godin with that seniority is hard, because that was a delegation that had a lot of seniority in the House. You know, all three members at one time with the low delegation had over 20 years and had a series of senators that have decades of local political experience before they became senators. So, and Steve Panchitakis from Lowell was a Senate Chair Ways and Means, a good friend of mine, you know, obviously very good for Lowell. So give you another example of a big city with now going to have an extremely young delegation. it's going to be very challenging for Lowell to push that city's agenda forward on Beacon Hill.
Yeah, and that's a city, a community that can really use assistance from the state.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, in Quincy, I'm still the kid in the group, which is kind of funny because I'm on my 12th year. But seniority matters. It really, really does. I can't emphasize this enough. I mean, my ability to get things done from a first term to the current term is a vast difference. Mm-hmm. And I tell all freshmen, you know, that, you know, you got to wait your time and it's in seniority-driven business. But, you know, you learn how the place works and, you know, eventually we'll get stuff done over time. But you got to put the work in, you got to want to do it. And the entire South Shore is pretty fortunate. I mean, Jamie Murphy in Weymouth, Mark Cusack is my classmate in Braintree. Joe Machino's great down in Hingham. Bill Driscoll's still very, very new, but because of his emergency management experience has been invaluable through COVID over in Milton. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Quincy and the surrounding area on the South Shore is right now very influential on Beacon Hill.
Can we talk a little bit about the governor's proposed tax cuts, Tacky, what they are and how you feel about them?
No, we'll take a look at them. I mean, tax cuts aren't a new proposal. What's interesting about these tax cuts is actually targeting more of the middle working class to more working, what I call like the working lower and middle class folks. I hate using the word working poor, but I mean those folks in that bracket. And of course, you know, essentially providing some social programs for those at the lowest end of the socioeconomic scale. So it's actually kind of unusual for a Republican to push tax breaks, not for the top 2%, but towards the bottom half of the 2%, which is the other 98% of us.
Well, you could argue, you know, he's a lame duck governor, so why not, right?
Why not? And of course, he's playing to Democratic hands, right? Obviously, the more liberal end of the party is interested in higher taxation and higher tax breaks or deductions or credits for a segment of the population. We're not raising taxes, folks, so don't worry about that one. The idea, of course, is using the supplemental budget as the reason to do it, with surpluses about $2 billion plus. But, you know, surplus is going back as tax returns and credits, as we talked about the senior circuit tax break earlier. I mean, that's cash coming out of taxpayers' hands back to senior citizens and homes to offset property taxes and water bills. So that's cash. So that means, you know, we have to build into the budget missing revenue as well as any supplemental budget. So one of the concerns that's not complicated, folks, is that if you use one time and only one time revenue to cover a large number of tax breaks, what do we do in the following years?
Right. And, you've got red ink at that point, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah. So as we kind of like look at it, you know, carefully, we want the best bang for our buck in terms of helping people with these tax breaks, as well as maybe we have other alternative ideas regarding not these tax breaks, but others that other members are trying to push on the Hill. I personally like things like child care tax credit. I think that's a very important thing. The speaker expressed an interest about adjusting the estate tax. When people die, the first $1 million is not taxable. However, if you're over $1 million, the entire amount of the estate is taxable, as opposed to the first $1 million being just a deduction. A very antiquated system. You know, it makes more sense, you know, in the 1930s than in 2022. So, you know, the speaker expressed interest in seeing if that can be resolved. So, I mean, obviously, you know, we're not taking things off the table from the governor, but at the same time, you know, we can put things on the table and replace things that he has as well. Yeah. But again, this is a long-term thinking issue. You're right. Lame duck governor doesn't worry about it, but, you know, it's the legislature that needs to think about it. And clearly he's playing into the Democratic Party hands here to try to, you know, spot particularly the liberal end of the party on trying to push their agendas forward. And, you know, it's politics, folks. It's you all know the Democratic Party is very diverse in its political leanings. It's not a monolith by any stretch. And the governor knows how to try to play to the moderates, to play to the liberals and try to see what kind of leverage you can create by doing things like that.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, trying to leave a legacy too of some accomplishments before he leaves.
Well, this is the COVID governor, right? You know, people tend to forget Jane Swift was the 9/11 governor these days. So time does pass, but he's also the governor that, you know, signed into the largest education reform package in 30 years since Tom Birmingham and which was Bowger and Charlie Flaherty back in the early 90s, right? So, you know, he's shepherding through a bond bill now of $9 billion to match the $9 trillion of infrastructure money that we're getting from the feds over the course of a decade. So, I mean, we're not $9 trillion. My number's too big.
I was just going to say,
I wish it was $9 billion, right? Right. We're trying to shepherd through a matching bond bill to try to leverage all the federal money. And of course, we got to look at those bond bills very carefully as well, because again, that's debt service down the road. And also the next governor has to deal with it. And it's a 10-year spread. So it's not like we're getting in 1 year. So it's systematic.
Right. The next couple of governors actually has to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Governor Baker, has done different kinds of healthcare reform, worked through legislature on expanding green energy, especially windmills and hydro. So the governor has been involved over the last decade. And I think he will leave a strong legacy of policy that will continue for decades to come, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see this campaign session, over the summertime, what the candidates have to say about the governor's policies and what they feel they should change.
Well, I think the governor's race will be the most interesting, because the Republican Party is, as you've seen in newspapers, are trying to find itself again. I don't want to get into it too much because you can read about it. But I mean, obviously, they're not a monolith either. They're not a single party in the same ideology, much like the Democrats. And I don't understand these things like dinos and rhinos, because there's nobody that says, out there that this is the thing it does, because I didn't elect you to tell me what to do. My people elected me. So, I mean, duh. I always find this like kind of silly. It's like, dude, I'm elected by my constituency, not elected by the state party or the national party. They can have an agenda, but they don't dictate what I am. Same thing with the Republican Party, identical situation. People are elected by their local folks, and the state party, national party can say whatever it wants. But, the reality is that, we have to do our constituent services and, respond and listen to the people in our district. And sometimes they ain't happy with us. And that's kind of part of the business.
Reach the road, as they say. Yeah.
It happens. I mean, I fully expect going to this and I was going to be happy with me, and some people will. And that's life. It's just how it works. So, it'll be interesting how the Republican Party discuss or not discuss Baker's legacy. Democratic Party will more likely than not just talk about their vision of the future, whether it be for statewide office or local office. Then we'll see how it enrolls. Watching OCPF's accounts, they have a website that tells you all about forming new accounts for campaigns. And gives you a clue exactly what's coming down the pipe, because there's still plenty of time for people to choose to pull the trigger on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Can I bring up a local issue, Tacky? You might not have the answer right away, but I know you're familiar with Representative Ayer's proposal to look into creating a ferry service from Squantum to Boston. Is that going anywhere?
I think it's a proposal that the committee is going to look at very closely in the House. Obviously, again, Bruce has been around a few years. He has a lot of seniority as well. I support my colleagues in government regarding their local issues. I don't represent Squantum, obviously, but I do support my colleagues and their endeavors. And it's not necessarily a new idea, but it's an idea definitely looking at, especially as we saw Mass and Cass over in Boston. And a lot of those services used to be in Long Island, and Mayor Wu was put in a very bad situation. Frankly, left by Tom Menino. I mean, that's how long it's been going on. Marty Walsh inherited from Mayor Menino, and Mayor Woods got it from both Walsh and Menino. So she was put in a really bad spot. And we'll wait to see what the summertime with Massacast looks like when we get warmer again. That being said, I mean, Boston needs to make a quick decision here at some point whether they're going to invest in more services within city limits, meaning in Boston itself, or they're going to have to find a way to reutilize Long Island quickly. And building a bridge takes a long, long time. Those of you who live in Quincy Point knows about the Fall River Bridge very well and how long it takes to rehab there. This is a bridge also that needs to be paid by City of Boston money. It's a private bridge. It's not a state project. So there's that part. And there's also the infrastructure on the island, which has largely been neglected for close to a decade now, which is going to need rehab. The city's going to have to make investments in that or find some private money to help them make an investment in Long Island. So a ferry service that that Rep. Ayers Bruce is proposing will make some sense in the short term, and whether Mayor Wu decides to grab a hold of that proposal and push it forward, we shall see. But a bridge takes a long time to put up, and they do
a lot of money.
A lot of money. And given the length of that bridge, you could see from Wall Street Beach, you remember, you now could see the eggshells on MWRA. Plant a big egg carton kind of looking thing. if the city of Boston wants to try to address their human service issues in the near term, Bruce, I think, is onto something here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see for sure. That's the whole area of Squanum Point Park just seems to be underutilized right now. You know, Marina Bay is pretty much built out. There's a market there now, so there's a possibility, I think, for something to happen.
But that's a separate issue. So Squanum Point Park has been the test site for us to do pilots on ferry services in or around Boston Harbor. So that's a little bit different from Long Island, which is not part of Boston, not part of Squanum, really. I mean, it's near the bridge, so obviously not connected. So, I mean, the proposal is obviously to take people from Boston directly to Long Island. The closest ferry port they could use is Long Wharf, which is a regular ferry port. But I know that John Keenan and Bruce have been working hard to continue talking about a ferry service in around the harbor using Squanum Point Park. Seems fairly popular to me. I think the key is the airport. I think it's only an airport service. You can be in the airport in about 10 minutes. I don't like boats. People know I don't like boats, but even I think about taking a boat to Logan if it's only 10 minutes.
It's really attractive, yeah.
Yeah, I can take 10 minutes of fear. I can handle that. Just it saves me, 45 minutes of traffic. I think I'll pay whatever it is and just white knuckle my way through 10 minutes.
Exactly.
People know I don't like, I'm not a big guy of boats and water. But it makes a lot of sense. I think that's a big part of it. And it's something I actually discussed with Maura Healey when she got up looking for an endorsement for governor. I am endorsing Maura Healey because it makes the most sense, quite frankly, everyone. I brought up coastal issues. I brought up things like, coastal defense, seawalls, putting up natural defenses with, sea grass and proper sandbanks, right? And I brought up, coastal water traffic as well, and the need for dredging and, we have a lot of marshland. I mean, environmental protection laws revolves around our marshlands because it's all floodplains. It's flood control. It was a big part of my conversation as a coastal community to governor candidate about the fact that coastal issues have been largely neglected. And that includes the DCR. I mean, I need a functional DCR. I need a functional environmental management agencies. I need a good highway department. Obviously, state troopers are a big part of the city. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's important to me as well. So, I mean, a lot of stuff I talked to Maura Healey was less about big public policy, but more about, what I consider weaknesses in government services that needs to be shored up.
Yeah, there's always concern about traffic on Quincy Shore Drive, about speeders, about pedestrian safety, as you're well aware, about cleanliness on the beach. So, yeah, it's a big part of the city.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if I understand people are all like about policy issues. And I'm cool with that. As you guys all know from listening to me for almost 2 years now, I obviously know some policy issues, but, a lot of the government service stuff is not lost on me. And I'm very aware of what the faults are at this point. I mean, I do pay attention. I do have my staff do a lot of things for me, but, I also did a lot of constituent services long before I got elected. And, when I didn't have a big staff, had to do a lot of stuff on hand. I do kind of have an idea how things used to work, but every new governor likes things how they work. So, I'm not the governor. So if they want to operate state government the way they view it, well, they're going to do it. But I mean, we're going to advocate that certain things need to get done.
Right.
And investments need to be made. So, it's not just, stuff on the water, but, a lot of other services in general. And I hope to have more conversations with Maura Healey going forward, talking about kind of the brick and mortar stuff. But, obviously I can talk big picture about energy and healthcare policies and all this other stuff too. But, the bread and butter, so to speak, or, day-to-day life stuff is still very, very important. I mean, the RMV is the disaster zone. It's been tough since the governor first got elected. I mean, it's been 7+ years of this. And COVID really, again, revealed a lot of weaknesses in city and state services. I mean, government services in a whole. And COVID revealed those holes and also the inequities in government services of who's getting what.
Right. Yeah. Any changes coming for the T in your district that you're aware of, Jackie?
No. I know ridership and T has been gradually improving. You still require to wear masks pursuant to CDC guidelines on public transportation. You saw in the news, there have been incidents already, people not wanting to obey that and cause problems for folks and delays. Obviously, the T took advantage of the COVID lower traffic period to do massive infrastructure improvements because, you know, there's less people riding. It's just like all the road work we saw. Less people on the roads mean more time to get stuff done. But I mean, I did actually talk to Maury Healy about this too, with the MBTA, and it's a never ending tide of infrastructure problems. It just never ends. General Manager Pollock, Paul Taff, can't pronounce his own
name. Tech,
Steve. Yeah, there's that F and T that messes me up.
You're thinking of the old Transportation Secretary, Stephanie Pollock. Yeah.
I mean, he had to make some really hard decisions and some very unpopular decisions.
Yeah.
And things aren't perfect. And honestly, folks, it'd never be perfect. You can't find me a perfect subway system. So maybe Japan. I mean, they actually cram you they push you into the cars. I visited Japan on a government trip. They don't screw around on subways and their long distance rail. They really do.
They have a schedule to keep, and they're going to keep it.
Yeah, they don't care about you. They got to keep that schedule. They don't care if you're there or not, and do it. You're going to get down that train. They're going to shove you in there because they're going to keep that schedule. So I mean, maybe Japan's the exception, but I don't know how many people would like to be treated that way here.
Wouldn't fly.
I can see it because constituent clip plates right off the bat. They won't wait an extra half a second for me to get on the train. They shut their doors in my face.
I mean, they'll be all over social media in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Japan's probably the exception to the rule. Yeah. It's second oldest system next to London. Those are hard decisions to make. And any decision you make at the T is just going to upset someone and discover. I've yet to see any time the T makes a decision that anyone's going to be happy about. Never happens. In my 26 years of dealing with government, and particularly the T, never once ever seen anybody happy with T decision.
But they are hiring. There are opportunities for sure.
We're also going to be seeing a lot of changing government. This also is a concern for me. This is not my first lame duck governor. I have many in the past. And I like to remind folks, no one likes to be the last one to turn off the lights. It's true. So a lot of people in upper management teams and middle management teams that are appointed officials, not union protected or civil service protected, you know, will be polishing their resumes right about now and looking for greener pastures. This is just how things work. So it gets a little tougher the deeper you go into summer into the fall, because what happens is that some leadership in the operation of an agency, people tend to be extremely cautious about what they do because they're concerned, you know, the new administration come in with new bosses and, you know, if employees have been doing stuff that they don't know if the new boss would like, they're going to just, I like to call it rinse and repeat, just keep doing the same things over and over again on what they do and not branch out any further for fear of potential repercussions by a new employer.
Yeah. Kind of flying under the radar, hoping they can avoid any kind of disruption.
Yeah, no, same as anywhere else. I mean, the government has the same issues as any other business regarding this stuff. And you don't know who your new boss is until they show up. And the new boss will bring up, obviously, state government's big. So it'll be a big team of folks replacing a lot of the Baker folks. And, they don't have to learn a whole new system in 2023, provided you guys send me back up to learn how the new system works. And then, I have to work with their system.
Any campaign events you want to talk about, Jackie, coming up?
I've been informed the Democratic City Committee is doing a signature drive at the Fours on April 7th from 5 to 8. If you're a Democrat on the road and look at some nomination papers for statewide candidates and local candidates and county candidates, we're going to try to get that there. I'm still short in details, so definitely Quincy, check out the Quincy Democratic City Committee website and Facebook for more information. And we'll see how that goes. I've been doing this happened in 2020 COVID, and I took a tip from Michael Morrissey, believe it or not, on this, and have been mailing nomination papers out to folks to have individual families just sign and mail it back to me. If you live in district, you're a Democrat on the road, you can do that. Actually the response has been pretty good. I mean, it's going to be a lot of more papers. Normally I like to fill a whole sheet out before I give the city clerk, but they're going to get a lot of papers with three names on it. But it's hard, because our a lot of events got postponed or pushed out because of uncertainty what's going on COVID. I mean, we didn't have a St. Patrick's Day luncheon, which can be fun and interesting depending on who you are. Obviously, the festival is not done, but I mean, there's talk about doing fundraising events now in May and June for various not-for-profits, pending how things go with COVID. And a lot of PTO events, similar things like that. I mean, you know, there's also extremely a lot of caution of kids, particularly you know, young children aren't vaccinated. So as much people like that, the public come visit, you know, I do think that people are being very careful about exposure. And like I said, I mean, obviously I have take care of someone that's, you know, immune compromised at home. I'm the primary caretaker. You know, I've been trying to be as careful as I can possibly be everywhere I go. So, but I got friends getting married and whatnot. So, you know, they're all trying to do, you know, vaccinated, proof vaccination, rapid testing prior to arrival, to be, you know, space between tables, try to keep people together, know each other well, you know, things like that. I mean, people are really working hard to make it safe, make people comfortable. No one's insulted if you don't show up. But also, you know, try to make a fun time. Again, it's a new normal. It's the new normal is being considerate of others, particularly if you want to fun and safe events, because I have already heard about super spreaders regarding weddings in particular.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it didn't just hit one. It hit hundreds.
It's Biogen all over again.
Yeah. So, you know, well, we can see how things move forward. But, I mean, you know, B2, again, higher spread rate. Again, you're vaccinated. Your odds are better. You're not going to get sick. But, again, it's a concern I have, personal concern I have, that even if you are vaccinated, you could be asymptomatic carrier and could give it to someone that isn't immune compromised. And that really does. That's a real, real concern of mine.
Yeah, you don't want to bring that home. Absolutely. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. This is continuing to be a very big concern of mine.
Yep. Good time to let you give out your contact info, if you could.
Sure. 617-722-2014. 617-722-2014. We have been staffing the office at skeleton level. So someone should pick up your phone or mash a button and drop in a voicemail some places, I tell people. But we'll be discussing more people coming into the office and state house tours. Still not clear what's going on in that one. I think it's still by appointment only. But check in with us if you're looking for a state house tour. Public events, still not sure what's going on yet because we have issues about putting crowds of 300 people in a cramped space. Mm. So not sure what we're doing there. But 617-722-2014 is the phone. Tacky.chan, tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. You know, email me directly. Happy to see what we can do. Got a constituent concern, takes priority. Public policy, I did read it. It goes into a folder. We'll monitor the situation and they'll keep your thoughts in mind. You know, social media, State Representative Tacky Chan. You guys all know this at this point. You know, put some just useful information and some comings and goings of where I've been. Twitter is Tacky Chan. And, you know, of course, tackychan.org. Again, that's a reference website, you know, useful information, phone numbers and websites of social service agencies and other folks that, you know, maybe you don't have to give me a phone call. Maybe you can find it there and, you know, you can self-serve.
Sure. Yeah, that's the way of the world now, right? Anywhere you go, it's self-checkout, self-this, self-that.
Yeah, so plenty of ways to convey information. Of course, spending every week with you is the highlight of my week. So that helps too.
And you said that with a straight face. I'm impressed. is this where I'm supposed to say it's mine too?
Well, I mean, you have more guests than I do. So, I mean, you have a load of people you can pick a favorite from. You can tell me after we turn off the camera. We won't freak out the other guys.
The most unique guest I have. How's that?
Well, I'm definitely one that definitely tries to enjoy doing this, as you can all see. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong, but I think it's very important to enjoy what you do, and we are very professional, as you can tell, but it doesn't mean we can't be friendly professional as well.
Right. Yeah, well, we appreciate you here using local access to speak to the community. That's fulfilling our mission, so thank you.
Yeah, and I'm much more fun of you than Mark and his more statewide way. I wear a full suit and talk more and concise words in 30 minutes.
Yeah, no dress code on Tacky Talk. Thanks a lot, Tacky.
You too. Take care, Joe.